Get ready for some fun. This is Malcolm and You Know Who with Malcolm Out Loud. Open-minded discussion that's truthful, respectful, and direct. This is real life on the brink of greatness.
Heroes. Well, you know, we're all missing some heroes these days. We all grew up with heroes, and we need a hero now and then again. We're going to talk today about the story of Marcy Sims. I'm going to tell you all about Marcy, and you're going to meet one of the most highly decorated cops in the city of Las Vegas, and probably the whole country, for that matter of fact. Got a big show here for you again. It's Malcolm Out Loud here. Welcome, and I want to start with this. Anybody watch this, follow this Times Person of the Year? Anybody pay attention to that? The Times Person of the Year? It's always a little controversial, it seems, these days. But the winner this time around was German Chancellor Angela Merkel. She won Person of the Year for Time magazine. Now, there's a lot of prestige that goes with this. Merkel was, you know, a little controversial. There's some people who agree with this and some people who don't agree with it, but that's just about any choice they're going to make here. But in the top list of Time finalists on this short list they have here, they had some pretty strange people, in fact. They had the ISIS leader, al-Baghdadi, was one of the finalists, if you can believe that. Republican presidential contender Donald Trump was there. The Black Lives Matter activists. And Iranian President Hassan Rouhani was there. Even, you know, Uber, you know, those like the Uber, the cab drives there. I haven't driven in one of those yet, but I don't know how they are. But the CEO of that company, Travis Kalanick, was also on the short list. And the transgender activist, who could miss these headlines, Caitlyn Jenner, was also on that short list. Kind of a strange list, if you ask me. I don't know what that all represents. A kind of a crossbreed of our strangeness as a country and a world, maybe. I don't know, but it is a strange list. So it got a little interesting here because Donald Trump immediately came out. When he didn't win, he came out and said his tweets. This guy is incredible with his tweets. He uses Twitter like nobody's business. He said, "I told you Time magazine would never pick me as person of the year, despite being the big favorite. They picked a person who is ruining Germany." You know, I got to stop there a moment and say to you, if you want to be president of the United States, is that the kind of the way you want to start insulting our allies immediately? I'm not so sure that's going to be a good road into any house, let alone the White House, I got to tell you. But yeah, he doesn't. He gets away with it somehow. Somebody else said, there's some of these other tweets, "Trump's going to get more publicity losing Times Man of the Year than the winner will." You got to know that's true. Some guy, John Nolte, said that out of North Carolina. Another person, Colin Campbell, says, "Time Person of the Year, not Donald Trump." Another guy, though, came out, Matt Walsh, and said, "Hey, listen, I'm no Trump fan, but I know how he loses Person of the Year. Tragically, he owned 2015. Hard to deny that. And another one, "Trump is mad Merkel won Times Person of the Year." So Trump is mad that Merkel won Times Person of the Year and says she's ruining Germany. He has a point. He's ruining America, which must be harder. That was Matt Crossman said that. There's some interesting tweets out there. You're kind of fascinated listening to some of these. But obviously Trump went off, and he went off in a big way and insulted about everybody, including Angela Merkel, that, you know, that he should have been the winner. You know, that's the way he is about everything these days, isn't it? You know, if you go back to previous winners, by the way, in 2014, I don't know if you remember who won last year. How about the Ebola fighters? Do you remember the Ebola fighters? I remember that. 2013, Pope Francis won that year. 2012, President Obama, who was still on his Hope and Change campaign when he won re-election. 2011 was the protester. Do you remember the protester with all of the organizing sort of things going on out there and then the Arab Spring and all that? 2010 was Mark Zuckerberg. He won, the Facebook guy, CEO there. He won that year. You know, Mashable has an interesting comment in here in their headline of Person of the Year, and they say, "Just because someone is named Times Person of the Year doesn't necessarily mean you want to bring them home to dinner." You think? And by the way, in previous years, Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin both won Times Person of the Year, if you can believe that or not. So Time has a strange thing of picking the Person of the Year. They don't always pick, you know, the warm and fuzzy or somebody you will bring home for dinner. They pick all kinds of characters. And I don't know, it seems a little strange sometimes, some of these mass killers and people that are doing strange things, that they might be a person of anything. Maybe they ought to change the rules of Time Person of the Year. Maybe it should be Time's Person of the Year that did something that contributed to society as a whole, or, you know, didn't scare the hell out of people. Maybe that would be a good thing. Anyways, I find it very strange, and not all of those are heroes, but I'll tell you somebody who is, Marcy Sims. Great story on this lady at thebrinkofgreatness.com. You'll find her right there. She's an NYPD lieutenant, and we just lost her. She just passed away, but this is a hero, and I wrote about her. When Ground Zero, remember 9/11 happened, this lady was on the front lines, spent 4 months there at Ground Zero. And, you know, when all the fumes and the dust and all of that cancer-causing stuff was out there, she was right there. And she knew it was a risk, but she was doing it to save others and to try to do the right thing. Well, 16 months after she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, we lost her, Marcy Sims. One of the things Marcy said that I find is interesting, and the pictures of her I see, I wish I'd met her because she looks like quite a lady. She says, and I quote, "If a man can do it, I can do it." Close quote. Isn't that cool? That was Marcy, so she kind of rolled her sleeves up and she went to it. And that's just the way it is with somebody like this. And so, you know, in fact, she goes on further to say here, the dust was powdery soft, the air was gray, and then when you breathe it in, you could feel your throat burning. And this lady still did it. She was truly an amazing human being, one in a million. Her sister, Susan Fosco, said she was an angel. She was a saint. She was my hero. And, you know, a celebration, there were so many people like this after 9/11 that did so much for our country that we need to celebrate and we need to stand up and acknowledge. You know, when I seen the story of Marcy Sims, and I just had to put her on the a brink story on the brink of greatness, because that's what the site is all about, is celebrating the goodness in people and these people who are our heroes. We're talking about heroes, just ahead, you're going to meet one of the most highly decorated cops from the city of Las Vegas. His talk, Policing with Honor, has been heard by tens of thousands of law enforcement officers throughout the United States, my friends. You'll know who this is on the other side of the break. Stay with me. It's Malcolm Out Loud. We'll be right back with you. Well, we were speaking about heroes before the break, and I would like you to meet the Who. Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Las Vegas Metro Police Department, retired now. More than 34 years of extensive police experience and investigations. And you know, he's got a few books out. True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, and A Cop's Life, True Stories from the Heart Behind the Badge, and a new one, which I wasn't real familiar with, The Power of Legacy, which we'll ask Randy about. Well, here, another cool point I got to make, Randy, before I let you speak, because you've also appeared in a couple of movies, I remember. You had Casino with Robert De Niro, and who doesn't know that, and Miss Congeniality with Sandra Bullock, and you were on some episodes of Cops, right?
Oh, yeah, I was on, actually, I've been one of the most featured police officers on that television show.
Is that right?
About 14 episodes of that show, and then I also did a couple other movies, including one with Salma Hayek and Matthew Perry called Fools Rush In. I got to deliver Salma Hayek's baby on the Hoover Dam. That was my part. It was kind of fun.
Cool, man. So you like, do you enjoy that?
I do. It's some of the... The movies and the TV stuff is a nice distraction. You meet some interesting people, and it's another good experience.
Right, absolutely, yeah. Now, when you do the movies and stuff, is that all? I mean, I ask you a personal question: do you get paid for that stuff, or do you have?
Oh yeah, I'm a Screen Actors Guild member.
All right,
and yeah, that's those are paid gigs.
Okay, so if I want to start featuring the movies with Malcolm, you think you could get me in there?
Oh, without a doubt, I could be casting director.
There you go, man. There you go. Who knows what I would play, but it's got to be a good guy, buddy. I don't want the bad guy thing. So, although acting is acting, isn't it?
Well, actually, the one of the biggest parts I ever had was in the premiere episode of the television show Las Vegas with James Caan, right. And I actually got to play a bad guy because normally I play policeman. So it was kind of fun to play a bad guy for a change.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting, isn't it? I would imagine. So, all right, let's talk a little bit here. There's a lot to talk about with you, and I want to start off here. You know, things have changed a lot in our country. You know, I spoke to you a couple of years back. You remember?
Certainly.
And we spoke when I was doing the show out of Salt Lake City, and I remember speaking to you about it. It was a great interview. We had some fun. And, you know, a lot has changed, though, you know, Randy, in the last couple of years since we had spoken last. It seems to me in the headlines today that, you know, the role of a police officer and law enforcement specifically has really taken a hit in our country. I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to have the same cachet that it had at one point. And, you know, there's a lot you can sort of pin that on. A lot of it's, I kind of call it an extremist viewpoint or conversation. Let me ask you this question. Do you know about how many, do you have any idea about how many law enforcement officers there are in the United States?
Of course. I can tell you almost exactly how many there are. Okay. Almost 900,000 active duty sworn law enforcement officers throughout America, and there's 18,000 different police agencies.
Wow. Okay. All right. So with all of that, you're talking almost, I mean, not too far shy of a million.
Just under a million, right. Okay. Now that's sworn law enforcement officers. That's not necessarily cops who are on the street.
Okay.
But that's actually people that are sworn, and in some category, either detectives, administration, or actually street officers.
Okay. All right. Now, when you look at recent headlines and you look at, you know, some of the challenges, which we'll talk a little bit more about, but in Ferguson and Baltimore and others that have sort of taken on an entirely different, created some more new talking points in our country, what is going on? I mean, what I'm understanding first is, you know, why is it when we look at law enforcement, they've taken sometimes, I think often, the media, they take, you know, one incident or two, and then they blow them up, and then they take the entire industry, and they seem to throw it all in the same talking point and say, okay, they're all bad or something. Why do you find that is?
We've seen since Ferguson, which was one of the defining moments in law enforcement, we have seen a sea change in the way that the media has chosen to portray the police. We've seen a concentrated effort, well-funded effort, to portray the police in a negative light, and by a number of movements. The key figure in manipulating the law enforcement narrative, the lies that grew out of Ferguson, right, which included the "hands up, don't shoot" myth, right, was a guy very well known to you and to most people that are that have knowledge about what's going on in America. It's a fellow named George Soros.
Oh, yeah.
And George Soros, his entities last year, since Ferguson, have funded almost $33 million to groups like Black Lives Matter and a number of other anarchist movements. And he has a really good ground game, and they are funding much of this negative publicity that has been now.
Randy, what's the point? What do they gain? What's the point of it? I don't. What am I missing? What do they gain?
Well, their end game is it's to push a liberal agenda.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Does that compute to a lawless society?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Not to anybody, any thinking human being. But you got to remember that this is they're extremists, and never let the truth enter into the way of a good good story. Yeah. So you know, when you look at what happened in Ferguson, which was the critical moment, the tipping point, if you will, and every investigation ruled that the police officer Darren Wilson did everything that he was supposed
That's
to
right.
do
That's
correctly
right.
and properly,
right.
But that didn't stop a witness, quote unquote, who was actually a co-conspirator, from making up this story about the "hands up, don't shoot," and then the media, which unfortunately much of the media was complicit in this, repeated this falsehood over and over
hands
again.
"Hands up, don't shoot." That became
and
the
it
whole
created,
narrative. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we even had celebrities. Doing the "hands up, don't shoot," and absorbing this myth, making the police look like murderers, and it was actually nothing but a falsehood.
Yeah, and they ran with it, and they not only ran with it, but I mean, this became the whole new mission of the entire conversation, Randy. It took over. It was on the late shows, the comic shows. It was everywhere.
Everywhere. It was to the point. I don't know if you followed this, Malcolm, but there's been a lot of unrest up in Minnesota, right. Minneapolis, yes. Yeah. And the police chief and the mayor. The police chief in uniform and the mayor of the city were videotaped. This is only a couple months ago now. Okay. Doing a hands up, don't shoot dance.
It's insane. It's
insane. I mean, so we even have people in political positions, leaders of police organizations, who are feeding into the myth for their own political benefits.
Right. Absolutely. And it was a myth. And in fact, some of the news anchors started talking about that being a myth, and they just were not being believed. And some of them were like banging their head against the walls. I mean, week after week, and they still weren't getting through to people. And it wasn't changing the narrative. And you really, a lot of people, sensible people, could not understand what was going on. And then, you know, I follow a lot of good news stories, and I sort of watch what's really going on in law enforcement. And I see some incredible stuff out there, Randy, I mean, that are happening on the front lines. And a lot of it kind of started to make me sick as to what was happening on. And then, to tip things off, and you mentioned Ferguson being the spark, and I agree with that. However, take it forward to Baltimore. I mean, to me, that was a really classic case of everything getting screwed up and going wrong badly. Then you had you had a mayor who had them stand down. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It was like, Randy, I have to tell you, when I watched that, it was like I was watching a third world country. Yes. And that it was a corrupt mayor in a corrupt environment who was creating this havoc. And, you know, and the law enforcement, I mean, I was sick over it. I mean, to see them being, you know, barraged with these rocks and sticks and boulders and things that were happening. And they were told to stand there and take it, and then the police sergeant there, who did nothing, and since has been gone. I mean, he's out of there now. But he didn't even stand up for his troops, did he?
Oh, you're talking about the police commissioner, Batts.
Commissioner Doofus, yeah.
Right,
Doofus.
Right. Oh, yeah. It was a mess from beginning to finish, a mess that they still are trying to clean up now that has gotten completely out of control.
Well, I don't know how you clean that up, Randy, when a lot of the police officers didn't even want to respond. I mean, crime went sky high after that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Their murder rate about tripled.
Yeah, why would they go out of their way after the mayor did what she did and the police commissioner did what he did and so on and so forth? I mean, it became really a laughing stock. But anyway, so then you had Baltimore that, to me, was a game changer, Randy. That sort of changed everything. Then you had this recent attack on San Bernardino, and then you've got gun control back in the conversation again and a whole lot more. All right, so listen, I want to talk about all that. I'm going to take a quick break with you, and on the other side of the break, we'll talk more about exactly that, bring that conversation further, talk about the gun control, and I'm anxious to get your views on it. We'll be right back with Lieutenant Randy Sutton in just a few moments. All right, we're back with Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Las Vegas Metro Police Department retired. And again, author, check out some of his books. We'll talk more about them ahead. And we've got to have Randy back again. There's just too much to talk about in one segment here. But True Blue, A Cop's Life and the Power of Legacy. And you're doing a lot out there, Randy, and I so appreciate your work and what you do. But you've also become a great spokesman for law enforcement, really. And you're really able to tell the stories from the front line, from a real vantage point that I couldn't possibly, because I haven't been in that role. I mean, I can understand a little bit, but not nearly like you can. You know, it's like, I always talk about our soldiers and our military, but, you know, I look at law enforcement in the same eye. I have to be honest with you. I really do look at them in the same way. The sacrifice they make and the commitment they make to our safety and security as a country and all the things that these men and women do out there, you have to have a heart for this and understand that, you know, there's always, you know, every industry, Randy, and everything out there that we know about always has, you know, a moment or two or a bad seat or two, but that doesn't really mean anything in the big scope of things.
But you're absolutely right. You know, when we think about the way the image has been portrayed lately about police officers involved with shootings, you know, murdering, hunting down and murdering innocent, unarmed black men. The real narrative is much, much different. And I try to translate, if you will, the thought processes and the mood of law enforcement for all to understand, both those within the field of law enforcement and also the people who these officers serve. You know, there is very often a disconnect that takes place. And so one of my roles is to try and bring both the police and the communities that they serve together by explaining what is going on in the hearts and minds of those who serve.
Yeah, well said, well said. All right, so once Baltimore happened, we pick it up there as we left off here. Tell me, and then you're seeing crime rate go sky high. What has that done to law enforcement nationally? What is the mindset now? I mean, how much did that impact police officers everywhere?
Oh, it's had a tremendous impact. Everything that's been taking place since Ferguson has had a detrimental impact on law enforcement in a lot of different ways. And I call it the war on cops, because the war on cops is not just the physical threats that take place. It's not just those that are, you know, well, let's go back to what the threats that face police officers throughout the country have always been: the criminal person that is committing a crime that the police are, that's their enemy. You know, that's who they go after. So that danger has always been there. But now we're seeing dangers from a much higher spectrum. We see people who are literally targeting for death and injury police officers simply because they are police officers. And that's increased dramatically.
Well, you're in a dangerous area here now. So is enrollment, do you know, I mean, you're on top of all of this. So is enrollment off with people becoming police? Is that taken a hit at all in recent times?
You know, that's interesting. There was just a study that was done. The policing has always been sort of a dynasty profession. That is that young men and women, as they grow up, they see their mom or dad as a policeman, and they want to emulate them. They want to join. And cops have always been very proud of bringing their offspring into the profession. You know, sometimes you have three or four generation police families. And 2 years ago, there was a poll done asking police officers if they would advocate bringing their offspring into the job, and 85% said yes. Well, about 6 months ago, they did another poll asking exactly the same question, and 85% said no.
Wow.
Huge difference. Huge difference.
I mean, which shows you. That's a total 100% reversal.
Yes, it is. I mean, and I've been anecdotally, I understand that recruiting is down, and also the quality of the recruit has diminished.
Right, the quality, yeah, I can see that too. All right, so there's been a change in all of it then in law enforcement, and you know, when San Bernardino happened and that police officer, which at the time I wrote about it immediately on my Brink of Greatness, I didn't know who the officer was at first, but he said, it just blew me away. You got to know, Randy, it blew me away. When I seen the video of that officer, and he didn't know this video was being shot because it was from a lady in the back who just happened to, like, a lot of people have their cameras and they play them now in these moments of extreme, you know. And she has it playing, and he says, you know, as people are rushing out to get to the elevator from this horrible scene, try to relax, try to relax. I'll take a bullet before you do. That's for damn sure.
Mm-hmm.
I just stopped in my tracks and said, wow. I mean, talk about a different narrative than what we've been hearing the past many months, of course. And this, by the way, was Detective Jorge Lozano. Now, we know that. What do you think about that?
Well, I wasn't surprised to see it. I have seen, you know, having been a policeman for, you know, more than three decades, Malcolm, I can tell you I have seen courage and honor and integrity displayed in so many sets of circumstances. I've served alongside heroes. I've watched them. I've seen these men and women willing to place their lives in harm's way in order to save the people that they serve. Amen. So this isn't anything unusual. This was just, this happened to be caught on tape. And I'm so happy that it was, because it really, really demonstrates the commitment that 99.9% of law enforcement officers do have.
All right. So listen, I want to touch the next couple minutes that we have here on gun control. Immediately after San Bernardino, as well as other recent attacks, the conversation for a lot of people became gun control, Randy. Okay?
Right.
It became, and the president used it. The Nancy Pelosi's used it. Hillary Clinton used it. A lot of them used it immediately, which really was a bit of a distraction. I mean, but so you, I know you were not surprised by that, but what, I know you were. You're laughing, but I know you were not surprised by that. So what happens now? How, this whole gun control conversation, where do you think this goes next?
Well, you know, this is a fascinating conversation. This has been being used as a political weapon, but to push forward an agenda that has been in the president's backpack for a long time. And they jump on anything that they can in order to try and move that agenda forward. So instead of concentrating on what this truly was, Muslim terrorism, Muslim extremism and terrorism, they just try and switch that conversation. I'm actually in the process of creating an organization called the Armed Law Enforcement Officers Veterans Association.
Well, we're running out of time this moment, but I want to tell people a couple of things. I want to tell them, first of all, your website, thepoweroflegacy.com, thepoweroflegacy.com. You really are. I mean, I am so thrilled to have you connect back with you, first of all, to have you back on the show. I want to connect again. So we'll have you back on in the next week or two, because I want to bring this further, and I want to talk more about what you just talked about here as we have more time to explore this and a whole lot more. Lieutenant Randy Sutton again, and Lieutenant Sutton, thank you for your service and for your commitment, for everything you're doing out there for law enforcement and for America. We all appreciate it very, very much, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I look forward to talking to your listeners on Facebook under Randy Sutton, News Personality.
Perfect, perfect. And all right, we'll talk more about those life lessons, and I want to talk about the life of Marcy Sims right after the break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back. You know, the biggest reason I call this show This Is Real Life on the Brink of Greatness is because that's what we need to do. We need to celebrate real life, and we need to celebrate greatness. You know, I find there are many good things happening in society today and in real life that you just never hear about. Because really, at the end of the day, that the media doesn't celebrate greatness. They celebrate mayhem, murder, rape, and the rest of it. That's all you hear when you tune in or watch or listen or whatever it is. So really, I think, you know, we're talking about facing real issues and real challenges, but we're also talking about the fact that there is greatness out there. There are heroes amongst us. You know, you met Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Las Vegas Metro Police Department, earlier. And I have to tell you, it's people like this that make the greatness of America up. I really enjoy talking to him. There's so many more things to talk to him about. He will be a regular. We'll have him back again. Love discussing real law enforcement issues with somebody who understands the problems that we're having in society today when it comes to law enforcement. You know, I think the more I've looked at some of the good stories in our police and our law enforcement, there are so many good things that they are doing every single day that they get no credit for whatsoever. Nobody plays the good stuff. The only thing we hear is the odd story where something went wrong, and then you got the whole game change about, you know, race, and you get racism involved, and you get riots like you had in Ferguson and Baltimore, and the next thing you know, you got a full blown out war, and you got the president chiming in, and, you know, and you're talking about things that are irrelevant to the problem, but they become talking points within the media, and the media just continues to beat that drum. So some of the heroes I've been thrilled to capture on the brink of greatness. And my friends, this is a great site. This is a site that celebrates the human spirit. It talks about what's right with society, what's right with so many people who do things that you might never really know about. For instance, I want to take you to another story right now. These two police officers, they had pulled, have you ever been pulled over by a police officer because you didn't have your kid in a proper restraint? or maybe a seatbelt or something. You know, maybe the kid wasn't in a seatbelt or whatever it was, or they just, you know, most of these communities, you have to be up to a certain age. The child has to be in a restraint, a proper restraint. And some of these restraint chairs, they cost like, I don't know, $100 or so. I think that's an average cost for some of these. So it gets pretty expensive if you got 3, 4, 5 kids and you're on a tight budget. Well, two police officers in Cedar Park, Texas, pulled a family over. Okay, this one police officer, his name is Justin Gower, and he pulled him over. There was a malfunction in light and an expired registration that they had. They knew, you know, it's a smaller community, so they knew the family. They didn't know them well, but they knew that that things were tight, that they didn't have the money somehow or another to do this. And he was disturbed to see that the man's three young daughters were sitting in the back seat without car seats on. He said, and I quote, "I was upset because it's extremely dangerous. I have kids, and I know how fragile they are, especially how young these kids were," he said. Well, what happens next? And it changed everything, my friends. Instead of hitting the family with all three fines, and come on, guys, many of you people have been there, I know I have, where you can't afford the fine, and you just wish the officer would have some compassion for you, and yet they don't, and it kind of stinks sometimes, and sometimes you get lucky. In this case, this family got lucky. Instead of these officers giving them three citations, which they say this family would have never been able to afford, it would have created quite a hardship for them. And these kids were a year old, 3 years old, and 4 years old. They're pretty young kids, by the way. What they did, Officer Gower and Officer Hawkins decided to get all the police officers back at the department to chip in money. They all chipped in and bought three new car seats for these three little girls. How cool is that? He said, you know, one of the partners, again, Cale Hawkins, Officer Hawkins, says, and I quote, "We just kind of stepped off to the side and said, you know, we need to do the right thing here and get these people some car seats. But, you know, you don't always see that. You don't always expect that. And yet the cost of a ticket for not putting your child in a car seat varies from town to town. I looked at this, but, you know, some of the fines are upwards of hundreds of dollars. It can get pretty expensive. It changes from town to town. But certainly if you don't have the money, it just, you know, exasperates the whole thing because you have the fine and you have any late fees if you don't pay the fine timely. None of it makes any sense today. But again, these two officers I call heroes because they got the police department rallied around them to do the right thing. And you can find their whole story on the Brink of Greatness or on our Twitter feed again, at Malcolm Out Loud, or hashtag Malcolm Out Loud as well. And you'll find the story about those police officers and what they did. It's a very cool story. Same thing with Officer Matt Jarrett is another great story. And, you know, here was a story that this family, okay, this family was had bought their child, Serenity, an eight-year-old little girl, a bicycle that they didn't have the money for. And it was around the holiday time, and they decided to buy this little girl a bicycle. The mom and dad did. And, you know, when they told the girl they probably wouldn't be able to do it, that's what she wanted. So they put all their money, they saved it, got the little girl a bike. Somebody stole the bike, long story short. Well, they called in a report, never expected to know anything about it. This police officer shows up, and the police officer sees that, you know, this is a real problem, that this child doesn't have, you know, the bike anymore. The bike was stolen. This officer, by the way, his name is Matt Jarrett. Matt Jarrett. Got to say his name. And, you know, so they go ahead and they buy the bicycle for 8-year-old Serenity. He buys it himself for the child because he asked the parents if they'd be able to replace the bike. And they said, no, we couldn't even afford the first one. And they said, we're just going to have to go without. This police officer, you talk about doing the right thing, made the day for this 8-year-old. And I got to tell you, nowhere in this job description did it say when a bicycle is stolen from an 8-year-old that you have the responsibility to dig in your own wallet and replace the bike. But you know what? Officer Jarrett did exactly that. He had the heart to do the right thing. And you can see where that's so important for so many. And Serenity will remember that day for the rest of her life. I mean, she'll remember that day when she's 40 years old. She'll look back and remember what that police officer did. Small gesture by some means, but you know what? Officer Jarrett, he's an excellent example of what is right with humanity and what is right about law enforcement today. You know, right at the brink of a bad situation, he changed everything with that one small gesture. So there are so many great stories like this. You know, I'll tell you real fast this other one real quick, because this is kind of a funny one. I like this. In Manchester, England, you know, in the Manchester Police Department. So this older couple, they're like 95 years old. From all the pictures and the video I watched, which I did watch, by the way, they look like quite a couple. 95 years old. You know, Stu Ockwell and his... those are the two officers who showed up. Stu Ockwell and Andy Richardson were called. They had a 999 call. That's like our 911 calls here, but 999 call. And they went out to the house. And this older couple, which was their names, Doris Thompson is the wife, and Fred Thompson is the husband, 95 years old, and he's blind. And he's all dapper, dressed up with a flower on and the whole bit. You could just see the picture, nice little home. And they were lonely. They were lonely. And they called the 911, or 999 in this case, department. And the police officer showed up and thought there was a real problem, a tragedy here. You know, the officers came and seen what the problem was. And instead of getting all upset, these two guys, and I watched the video on this, it's a great little story. They sat down with the couple and had tea. had tea. And I'm not making that up. I mean, they actually sat down with the couple and had a cup of tea. And, I mean, this got reported all over the place to think that these two officers would take the time. And they took, you know, it was inside of an hour or so. But, you know, they changed everything for that couple. They changed everything for that older couple. They didn't have to do that. And how many officers would do that? You know, there are a lot of police officers out there who would do something like that. But we don't hear those stories. We don't celebrate those stories. And I'll tell you what, the Twitter feed lit up on that story. People were really, really excited. So there are a lot of heroes amongst us. They're out there, and they certainly are in law enforcement, my friends. You know, this part of the show, I like to talk about life lessons and what we can learn from a lot of things. And I have on my life lessons on the brink an interesting piece called 11 Tips to Living Life to the Fullest. Again, you can catch that on the Twitter feed or back at brinkofgreatness.com. But I want to bring you the end of this story, and I'll tell you a few of them right now. My favorites are 3, 4, 7, and 8. You can read the story later yourself, but I want to tell you a couple of them now. The best kind of friend is the kind you can sit on a porch and swing with. Never say a word, and then walk away feeling like it was the best conversation you ever had. I like that. Number 4, it's true that we don't know what we've got until we lose it. But it's also true that we don't know what we've been missing until it arrives. And number 7, dream what you want to dream, go where you want to go, be what you want to be, because you have one life and only one chance to do all the things you want to do, my friends. And that's it. That's a wrap. There's a lot more on there. You go check out that story, 11 Tips to Living Life to the Fullest. It's a great story. You'll enjoy it. And all these stories are on the brink of greatness. You also find a lot more of the news back at MalcolmOutloud.tv. Check it out there. Great to be with you. We'll see you again tomorrow. Remember, get involved, get loud.